Support for this podcast comes from Aluba. Aluba is a leader in data science and analytics skills assessment, offering comprehensive testing and candidate benchmarking with seamless integration into your hiring process. Aluba helps you assess the skills of data professionals in a fast and unbiased way, allowing you to uncover hidden gems which are often overlooked during manual CV screening. With Aluba, you can save the time and cost of filling data and analytics vacancies by providing an advanced online skills assessment and instantaneous feedback to all of your candidates. Find out more about Aluba at aluba.com/recruitingfuture and book a demo today. That's aluba.com/recruitingfuture. And Aluba is spelled A-L-O-O-B-A.
There's been more of scientific discovery, more of technical advancement and material progress in your lifetime and mine than in all the ages of history.
Hi everyone, this is Matt Alder. Welcome to episode 360 of the Recruiting Future podcast. The impact of the pandemic means that in 18 months, we've moved from discussing theories around the future of work to debating the practicalities. Fully remote, fully back in the office, hybrid working, the discussion and the publicity around the decisions companies make will dominate the HR news cycle for months, if not years to come. One of the key advantages of remote working is the ability to broaden talent pools across borders. However, this does come with complications. To discuss the challenges and advantages, my guests this week are Shane Nolan, Head of Technology and Emerging Business at IDA Ireland, and Louise Kelly, a tax partner with Deloitte in Ireland. Hi Shane, hi Louise, and welcome to the podcast. It's an absolute pleasure to have both of you on the show. And I wonder whether we could just start with you introducing yourselves and telling us what you do. So, Shane, would you like to go first?
Sure, Matt. And nice chatting with you. So my name is Shane Nolan. I head up technology and emerging business at IDA Ireland. So IDA Ireland is the Irish government's investment development agency. And we work with companies around the globe to either help them use Ireland for international market expansion or to scale their teams. We have about 1,500 clients and they employ a little over 250,000 people. And within that, I head up our work that we do with mostly with technology companies, but also with fast growing scale-ups.
Fantastic stuff. And Louise.
Hi, Matt. I'm delighted to be here today. So my name is Louise Kelly. I'm an international tax partner with Deloitte in Ireland. I work and help companies setting up operations in Europe, but particularly in Ireland. And that would include R&D hubs, principal companies, IP structures, customer support functions, and help them get established and advising on the tax impacts in particular.
So Shane, I'm going to start with some questions for you. I suppose, first of all, tell us a little bit more about IDA and the work that you do.
Sure, yeah. So as I alluded to, we work with companies from everywhere from San Francisco to Seoul, so globally, to help them understand what Ireland has to offer, either to help them break into the EU market or indeed to scale their teams if, you know, where they're based is experiencing talent squeeze. So we have about 1,500 clients, as I mentioned, and about half our time is spent making sure that we're removing barriers to scaling for these companies, and we're helping them drive more value from their investment in Ireland. And then the other half of our time is spent working with the next wave of companies in that sector. So on the technology side, the big employers in Ireland would include folks like Intel, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, TikTok. So real kind of geographic mix and sectoral mix. Tech and digital is probably one of the fastest growing areas in terms of employment within Ireland right now.
So we've obviously been going through, and indeed are still going through, a very disruptive time when it comes to work. What's been your experiences with the way that companies have been working remotely during the pandemic?
Yeah, like I know we're probably 18 months into the experience now, but I think the sheer speed at which people transitioned is still pretty impressive 18 months on. Like when we look back to March 2020, which is when, you know, the big transition happened in Ireland to working from home because of COVID, you know, pretty much tens of thousands of workers left their office and transitioned into working from home over a weekend. Coincidentally, it was St. Patrick's weekend as well. I don't know whether that made it any easier or more difficult, but essentially, once the following Monday arrived, everybody was online and working away. So I think that that's been probably the most impressive aspect. I think since then, broadly speaking, our clients have told us that productivity has been mostly maintained and in many cases slightly improved. I think, you know, a lot of employers that we're supporting or engaging with, you know, recognize that the challenges of home working as well, which is positive, you know, mainly challenges around maintaining employee engagement and social cohesion. But thankfully in Ireland, we've had exemplars of home working or blended working already pre-COVID. So we've had folks like Shopify, Amazon and Apple, who collectively have had thousands of employees in Ireland working from home since before the pandemic. So thankfully they've been sharing their playbooks around, you know, how they maintain culture and maintain and support employee engagement in a working from home environment. One of the other kind of trends that we've seen as well is around training. We have a workforce training organization in Ireland called SkillNets. And unsurprisingly, all of their courses around leading and managing remote have been oversubscribed over the past 18 months. We've also seen interesting statistics from LinkedIn, which would indicate that a lot of folks who are working from home are also using any spare time to enhance skills or do retraining. We're seeing interesting moves across certain categories of roles as well. So we're seeing folks move out of hospitality in particular into digital and sales roles. I think that's a trend that we're seeing beyond Ireland as well. But also seeing a lot of consistency now in terms of what employers are looking for. I think in the early days of lockdown, you know, we were seeing, you know, quite extreme positions in terms of, you know, what employees were looking for, were reported to be looking for. You know, in some cases it was being reported that all employees wanted to work, you know, from wherever in the world going forward, and there'd never be a return. But I think, you know, what we've seen certainly from polls that we've run, conversations we've had, and indeed third party polls, is about 15 to 20% of workers are counting down the days until they can return to the office. And this is typically the 24 to 34 age group, because they're missing the social aspects of work in particular, and learning opportunities that, you know, that come from observing colleagues when you're at that phase in your career. About 60 to 70% are looking for flex. So, you know, 1 to 3 days per week working from home. And then about 15 to 20% want to be working from home full time. And the largest cohort in that group would be folks managing demanding family or extended family obligations.
So many interesting things there. And yeah, this sense of certainly conversations that were going on 12 months ago about working, not just working from home, but working from absolutely anywhere around the world. And I know that's something that we're going to dig into a bit deeper in a second. Before we do, though, you mentioned sort of a number of US technology companies that you work with who've chosen to have their offices in Ireland. What are you seeing now? Is there an increase in US companies who want to come into Ireland? What's sort of happening moving forward? How is the pandemic sort of shifting things?
Sure. Yeah. Like, I think what's been encouraging and, you know, a little surprising is that foreign direct investment has remained pretty robust during the pandemic. We are still seeing new entrants into Ireland, a large cohort from the US, you know, looking at Ireland as an entry point into the EU market, where they can pick up, you know, other tech skills for, you know, sustained product development or multilingual skills for indeed sales and customer support. But also seeing interest in Ireland from European companies. You know, obviously there was interest in Ireland from the UK around Brexit, particularly from financial services. But we're also seeing interest from mainland Europe, you know, companies like Personio, which is high profile SaaS unicorn from Germany at the moment, are scaling up their international sales team in Ireland. So, yeah, not just from the US, but the US, we're still seeing a lot of volume. Also seeing growth from Asia Pac as well. So TikTok would have announced late last year that they grew by 1,000 people, their team in Ireland, during 2020. So quite dispersed in terms of the origin of investment, but yes, still seeing a lot of interest from the US. And I think, you know, if US companies find it quite comforting that, you know, they can land in an English-speaking common law jurisdiction and then serve, you know, 27 diverse markets from the one centre.
So, Louise, sort of turning the conversation to you, what are you seeing in terms of employees returning to the office post-pandemic? What are you seeing? What's your view?
Yeah, like certainly from speaking to a number of our clients, I think kind of a hybrid model is likely to be the kind of preferred approach going forward. I think there are some companies on both ends of the spectrum, you know, where some have announced, you know, that they intend to be fully remote. Others, you know, have announced as well that they see the vast majority of their employees being back in the office for the majority of time. But I think a lot of companies are kind of in the middle where they will probably allow some greater flexibility than before. I do think most companies are focused on allowing that flexibility where their employees are in the country of employment. So for Irish companies or companies that have Irish hubs, you know, the expectation is that their employees will be based in Ireland. So even if they're not in the office 100% of their time, that is when they're working remotely, that they will be doing that from Ireland. Certainly last year when the pandemic hit initially, you had people returning maybe to other countries where they had family members, or indeed, you know, people being in a location when the pandemic struck and you know, weren't maybe able to return to Ireland or to their, you know, their country of employment. And I think there was some flexibility given to employees during that period of time. And indeed, there was some flexibility given by some tax authorities that recognised that this was a fairly unique situation, and therefore the normal rules around employee taxing and, you know, the creation of a taxable presence for a company, in some cases, not all, but in some cases, were kind of relaxed, I suppose, for that period in 2020 when there was, you know, travel restrictions, etc. But I think, you know, we certainly have seen tax authorities kind of saying, you know, as we had gone into 2021, that some of those concessions were no longer available, and there was an expectation that employees would, you know, be in their country of employment, or if not, well, then that the employer dealt with some of the additional tax burden that might arise if an employee was working as it was outside of their home country. And I think, you know, some of those tax issues that need to be managed, you know, to the extent that an employee is not working in their country of employment, is whether the company has an obligation to withhold payroll taxes in the country where the employee is located. And, you know, sometimes those rates can obviously be higher or indeed lower than the tax rates in the country of employment. There could be different social security rates and obligations. And then also, you know, the individual working in a different country could create a taxable presence for the company. So the company may now need to pay corporation tax in that country. And sometimes, you know, the amount of additional taxes may not actually be that significant, but I suppose the additional compliance burden for the tax team, for the payroll teams within an organisation, can be actually challenging, you know, particularly if you have a number of employees being based in a number of different countries and therefore creating significant obligations. Some of the other tax considerations around individuals being outside of the country of employment would be to the extent you're relying on particular incentives. So, for example, the Irish Research and Development Tax Credit regime requires those R&D activities to take place in Ireland. And therefore, to the extent you have somebody doing that work, you know, no longer in Ireland, well, then that may impact your ability to claim that incentive. Or indeed, you know, if companies have particular transfer pricing models, you know, where the intention is that profits accumulate in one particular country, but now, and that was based on the substance and activities happening in that country, but now some of those activities are happening across a wide variety of countries, well, then that might undermine the transfer pricing model within an organization. So I think as we look forward and as companies try and bring their employees back into the office potentially or into the office part-time, certainly they're probably putting some more rigor around what is acceptable within an organization as to where an employee can be based if they're not in the office. And for a number of companies, they have said, well, but that needs to be in the country of employment. I think for a country like the US or indeed Canada, sometimes it's not just sufficient that that the employee is back in the US, but as was given different tax regimes across different states in the US or different provinces in Canada, there can actually be some different tax considerations, even if somebody is working within the country, but in a different state or province. So for some organizations, they've had to kind of grapple with that location or relocation around a country, not necessarily even outside of the country. But I think it will be interesting over the next 12, 18 months to see as companies return to the office and potentially to kind of that hybrid model, where things will settle down once hopefully the pandemic is over and maybe some of the social distancing requirements that currently exist in a number of countries get relaxed. What the future will look like, for a number of groups, and strategically, how they're going to deal with the future of working and that kind of hybrid model.
I think that's really interesting because what's certainly happening now is, I think we've had a kind of a very theoretical debate about what happens at the end of the pandemic in terms of remote working and hybrid working. I'm not even sure we know what hybrid working even means in reality yet. Here we are now facing some sort of very solid practicalities, particularly around remote working. Just a sort of couple of questions on that. I mean, you talked about in the US different obligations in different states and how that might cause issues for employers. One of the things that obviously Shane mentioned right at the start of our conversation was US companies sort of basing themselves in Ireland and getting access to the market of 27 countries. How does this work across the EU? If the company is kind of its European headquarters is in Ireland, but working remotely in other EU countries, what are the implications of that? Obviously, it's a complicated question, but just give us a kind of an overview.
Yes, so I suppose so you have the EU kind of as a block, I suppose each country within the EU will have their own tax regime. And therefore, in particular in the continent, people can obviously travel very, very easily between countries by road or rail. I suppose, if somebody is working in a different country from where they're employed, then that is potentially going to create some tax obligations in that other country. So there isn't, I suppose, a way to say, well, actually, you're still working within the EU. From a tax perspective, you're still having to look at, each individual country and analyse what the obligations might be if somebody is now working in France rather than in Ireland. Then there's French considerations. I suppose from an immigration perspective, there probably isn't the same kind of visa requirements. If somebody obviously is entitled to work within the EU, then that may be simplified. But from a tax perspective, each country will have their own tax regime and will want to tax an employee if they're working in that country, regardless of the fact that they're employed by a company that's resident in another EU member state.
And so what advice are you sort of giving to companies at the moment? What should they be looking out for? Are there kind of other regulatory HR issues that people should be aware of?
Yeah, I think the main kind of advice for companies is now that as things are settling, and particularly if companies are looking at what their strategy is going to be going forward, to ensure that as that strategy is developed, that all of the kind of the tax considerations that I mentioned, different maybe working laws that the different obligations that might be on a company by having people working in different countries, and the fact that labour laws can differ between countries, that all of those kind of things are factored in, so that the company can make kind of an informed decision around what they are willing to allow and what they feel should be should some of the rules or procedures be for ensuring that some of those compliance type issues are managed. There are certain kind of tracking tools and kind of IT systems that would help companies to be able to track, based on information being provided by their employees, where they're based and maybe what some of the obligations might be because of that. But I think it is a case of taking a strategic view to it as opposed to just reacting to individual requests that might come from a part of the business that they're looking to recruit, in a particular country because they find a really good candidate there, or indeed a request by an existing employee that they want to relocate somewhere. So taking more strategic view and taking all of those considerations into account, those would kind of be the key piece of advice, as I said, rather than kind of just reacting to individual requests.
So a final question for you both, and this is something I kind of ask everyone who comes on the show. Making predictions is a very strange game at the moment, but I'm just really interested, sort of based on what you're seeing, what do you think the future of work is going to look like over the next 12 to 18 months as we kind of move to this next phase? Louise, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I think initially there'll probably be a lot of flexibility allowed by employers as employees kind of start phasing their return to the office, because I think people will have different, sensitivities in terms of being in the office with their colleagues, depending on kind of vaccine rollout and all of that. And I think then, probably by the end of this calendar year, hopefully as things maybe settle, companies will probably continue to experiment a little bit in terms of what kind of the hybridity means for their organization. And I suppose, what they feel is important from a culture, a training perspective, and the level of flexibility that employees should have to allow them, I suppose, to focus on those items, but also be attractive to the marketplace. And then I think it'll be interesting after probably that, kind of experiment period of probably 2022, things will probably then land in a bit more of a cohesive way for particular companies in terms of what they feel works for them and how they how they need to, I suppose, interact maybe with their clients, with their customers, and indeed with their employees to try and maximise, I suppose, the engagement with their employees, but also, I suppose, their offering to the marketplace.
And Shane, same question to you.
Yeah, pretty much seen very similar trends to the ones Louise described. We're still in the great social experiment. Although, as I mentioned earlier, we have a number of clients who've been doing home working for decades and, have learned a lot during that period of time, particularly around how to facilitate employee engagement. Like, we've one company or client in particular, Shopify, who, give their team members budget to rent meeting rooms in hotels so that they can work together in their area for a particular day, just for that cohesion. So I think, as Louise said, we're probably going to see a kind of standard distribution in terms of the wants from workers. 60% are probably going to be in the office a number of days a week. And then we're going to see some interesting, operating models or fit-out models, as evidenced by companies like Dropbox, who've turned their building into a kind of collaboration and community building space with no desks. So like we're definitely seeing a trend of the kind of two C's, as we're calling it. Most employers feel collaboration works best in their office building because the infrastructure is set up to do so. And, particularly in tech, given the age profile, a lot of tech workers live with their friends or in multi-tenant houses. So the second C of concentration becomes really important. And again, the infrastructure exists to kind of do work in silent or concentrate on particular pieces of work in an office environment better than in a home environment.
Shane, Louise, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks, Matt.
My thanks to Shane and Louise. You can subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, or via your podcasting app of choice. Please also follow the show on Instagram. You can find us by searching for Recruiting Future. You can search all the past episodes at recruitingfuture.com. On that site, you can also subscribe to the mailing list to get the inside track about everything that's coming up on the show. Thanks very much for listening. I'll be back next time, and I hope you'll join me.
This is my show.
Welcome, change agents, to your go-to place for stories that ignite your spirit, fuel your purpose, and connect us all. We believe in the incredible power of the human spirit, its boundless resilience, and the inspiration it brings to our lives. On the Driving Change podcast, we'll journey together through the extraordinary yet very relatable experiences of some of the most amazing people on earth. Our mission? That through these stories, we might just spark change within you and awaken a newfound motivation to harness your unique gifts to make a real difference in the world. So get ready to be inspired and join us on this incredible adventure. You can find the Driving Change podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you love listening to your favorite podcasts.